Hey, what's up? Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Wonder Why with L Wonder. I'm your man, L Wonder. And this episode, I'm excited. This is our 25th, our quarter episode. And what we're going to do is we are going to close out the We Be Life series with this, with part 12 called, it's going to be entitled They Were Like. So go ahead, get yourself relaxed, get yourself sit back, relax. Because I'm going to have my man, Mr. K, Mr. Fagan, Keith in the Streets, he coming back. We about to jump on this. We about to wrap everything up with this 25th episode of Wonder Why with your man, L Wonder. And this part 12 of We Be Like, entitled, They Were Like. Thank you. Enjoy.
Gotta get that shine off my head.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome again to We Be Like. We said my fault. Welcome again to Wonder Why with L Wonder. We ain't been live in a minute, man. But I just wanted to say welcome back to everybody. I'm excited. I'm real excited because as you've seen, I've been doing a recording for the last 11 weeks because I wanted to tackle a project that was near and dear that really taught me a lot through the evolution of the project. But this We Be Like project, which came from one of the shirts that I'm wearing, where it just talked about how each one of these figures in Black history kind of shape our history. But before we get into that, I just want to say, hey, how you doing, man? How everything been, Mr. Fager? Mr. K?
Man, I'm taking it one day at a time, you know. Just making sure I'm getting these allergies together because, it's about to be that season for me. So, you know, making sure I ain't, you know, I'll swell up for the springtime or whatever, but you know, I'm getting back in the swing of things.
Ain't it crazy? Because nowadays, you even with all of these allergies, and we know it's allergy season, we got to be careful because we don't want it to make it seem like we sick in some other ways.
So, well, you know, me personally, I didn't already had COVID or whatever, and ever since this stuff happening, like, it's been way worse. I think I done had COVID twice already, but I definitely know I had it once. And, you know, I realized, you know, wearing these masks all the time have made it worse. I mean, believe it or not, somebody with some sort of like allergies or respiratory issues wearing masks all day in my profession is tough. So
yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, you put captions on here, huh?
I'm learning how to do it. I'm trying to get better at this thing. I'm looking at it.
I'm like, okay, you.
Yeah. I'm trying to do a little. So the thing about it is this has definitely been evolving. We started September, October-ish. So it's definitely evolving. I got one more series that I'm going to do over the next, 6 to 8 weeks. And it's called Bridging the Gap. And it's going to be where this drops off and picks in the next thing. So I got about another 6 to 8 week series. It's going to be called Bridging the Gap. And after that, I'll take a season off. And then I'll start my second season, like in the fall. So I'm trying to keep it together. And I like the way it's been taking off. But so I'm learning and it's evolving. It's getting to a different place. But I just finished this 11-week series, man. And I really want to bring you back so we can just touch on it a little bit. The reason why I wanted to do it is, first off, because of Black history. And I think I had to do a little bit of research to understand why we even celebrate it, because everybody's talking about we get the shortest month of the year. You know, how's they gonna give us that? And I come to find out the reason why we celebrate it was mainly because I want to say Frederick Douglass' birthday is the reason why we celebrated in February.
Okay.
That's why we celebrate. It was Black History Week. And then because they were celebrating it around his birthday, because that dude had a lot of pull with the president at the time. So because of him, that's why we celebrated in February. It was Black History Week, and then they made it into the month. So I really just wanted to spend some time and just talk about our history, because we did. Okay. We have a lot of history and influence. So I don't know how much that you caught of it, but I do appreciate it, because I did see that you've been watching, that you've been listening. So it always means a lot. But I started off with the dream.
Okay.
And Martin Luther King basically set a foundation about a dream he had. And it's funny, because that famous speech, how everybody talk about that famous speech, and that's one of the most famous speeches that he's known for. He wasn't even about to talk about the dream.
Okay.
Until, who was it? She said, tell him about the dream. It was a gospel singer. Who was her name? I want to say Mahalia Jackson.
It could have been.
I think, yeah, it was Mahalia. That's what it was. It was Mahalia Jackson. As he was speaking, she was sitting behind him. She said, well, tell him about the dream. Because she previously heard him talking about the dream. And that's when he started talking about the dream. How familiar are you with that speech in general?
I'm pretty familiar with the speech in general. I think that Martin Luther King was a visionary, and in order for anything to be done, there has to be dreams. You know what I'm saying? There has to be somebody has to have a dream for anything to be accomplished. There has to be a dream. There has to be a vision. And I think that, because a lot of people talk about, you know, like Barack Obama was like the result of that dream, and that, you know, a lot of what's going on here today is, you know, results of Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream. But this might be a little bit out of left, but I think that we are still trying to work on Martin Luther King's dream. We always see Martin Luther King's dream as something big. But Martin Luther King's dream was small, meaning that what he saw was based on what the situation was. People got to understand that Martin Luther King was in the South. And in the South, everything was heavily segregated, like really, really segregated. There was stuff, in other words, there were two, even after the Civil War, there were two parts of this country. There were still two separate parts of this country, just like it is today. Uh-huh. The way people of color interact with white people in the North is still different than in the South.
It is.
Like, the relationship is still different. And the people in the North had a totally different mentality during the same civil rights movement than the people in the South. You know, where the yeah. people in the South were more about let's march, let's be nonviolent, let's do these protests. The people with a Northern mentality was a little bit more vigilant. They kind of wanted the segregation, you know what I'm saying? They wanted their own areas. And there was a whole different makeup of the community. And one thing that I learned that in Martin Luther King's journey a lot of people don't talk about is that after Martin Luther King, he did what he had to do for the civil rights movement in the South. Martin Luther King Jr. went to Chicago.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And when he went up to Chicago, he seen a different black person.
Yeah. And I was, yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, he seen a different. So when I say about his dream is that what Martin Luther King had that dream before he went to Chicago. Mm-hmm. And after Martin Luther King saw the interaction with the people in Chicago, he was on record as saying he doesn't know if he did the right thing in the South with segregation, because he found out that just because the two cultures were coming together, it never meant that the white people were still gonna love them. It was just meant that they were gonna be, it just meant that they would be able to be at the same place at the same time, but it didn't mean that they were not gonna be mistreated.
And that, but you know, and that you're absolutely right. That's a real good point. And it's funny because I was watching a documentary on him, and it made me read, and that his time in Chicago, like, he was like, this is even worse than the South. Like, he was like, this is even wilder than the South, because at least in the South, you kind of knew what you were fighting against. Up here, you don't even know, because you not only did you have to deal with the racism, but the way that now it's a whole, like,
the way the blacks dealt with each other.
Blacks didn't really want to deal with each other on that level. So yeah, it was definitely a difference.
I wasn't discounting. I was just saying that his dream, what he really wanted, I think that we still trying to get. I think that sometimes we assume that we are already there. Mm-mm. Because of what we can do, because there's people in the NBA, there's people in the NFL, and we look at all these interactions. But if you think, I just seen a post, I was on MSN, and, you know, Lindsey Graham got on there and said that systematic racism does not exist. You know, basically it's just something that's made up by the media and things like that. And that upset me because my grandfather have stories of as a child, uh-huh, of police killing unarmed people of color, and so does my mother. Uh-huh. And both of them talk stories about racism. Like my grandfather said that when he came back from the war, from World War II, that think about this, and you a veteran, he came back from the war, and even though they fought in the war, they were still not allowed to buy homes. Uh-huh. Now just think about this. They couldn't buy a home. The only way you could have a home if you were black is if you bought the land and you built it from the ground up.
That's what your grandfather ended up doing, right?
Right. So he had to build his home, and he said that one black family did buy a home, and when the white people in the community found out that they bought the home, they burned it to the ground. He never was able to move into it. Now I want you to think about this and put this in perspective.
It's crazy.
Just recently, Lindsey Graham says that does not exist today, and it never really existed. But at the same time, if you think that there's not a chance that you can go into certain neighborhoods and you could just move in there and you can just be in there. Just try the theory out. I can promise you They might not necessarily burn your home down, but you're not getting in there.
And that, and that's where I think that's where, and that's why I want to move. That's why the next topic is going to be bridging the gap. And I got a couple different variances of bridging the gap. The first one is going to be a generational gap, but then I also I'm really looking for. So if anybody listening to me, I'm looking for somebody who's willing to have real conversation, and I'm looking for real strong, educated blacks and whites. And I'm not saying just book educated, but using common sense that we can have a real conversation to really give a perspective on some things, because I think a lot of these gaps is going on because first off, don't nobody want to talk, but then secondly, mainly don't nobody want to listen to each other. And I think that you're absolutely right. You know, it's easy. And we know how it is, you know, when I know the reason why I went to school was not because I like to go to school, not because I'm just excited about going to college. No, the reason why I was going when I went to school is because I knew I would never have a chance without a degree. I knew certain opportunities would not open up for me if I did not have a document saying that I'm at least good enough to be at the table. And so in saying that, and I was talking to this cop at the job the other day, and he basically feel like the same way. He basically, he was trying to make it seem like he was trying to villainize the teenage girl in Columbus who just got shot. And he was talking about, this is supposed to be like, I said, but this is the first off, this cop is running to this place and seeing a 16-year-old, don't even know the situation. And I'm not justifying the rules or regulations, but at the same time, regardless of all of that, this girl ain't here no more. This girl ain't here no more because she was defending herself and she was trying to, whatever the case may be. And I'm not, but this girl is not, somebody's 16-year-old child, 15-year-old child is no longer here because of this. Just like the other guy who died, he's not here no more. And all the rest of them, they're not here no more. And this is not accidental. Ain't none of this accidental.
You know, even in that situation, it's so sad because when I went to because I do a lot of communications online, and when I went to one of these websites and I was watching all the descriptions that all these white people had. I mean, did you think about this? In their paragraphs, this is what they were saying. They were using words animal, mm-hmm. criminal, you know what I'm saying? Killer. You know, out of control. Like they the way that they were describing her. Showed you, and this is actually what started with Obama getting elected. That's when this really got bad. Like, because everybody was okay with the control, but it wasn't until they seen Obama in office that a lot of racist people felt like, well, wait a second, we might live. Yeah, we might have slipped, and they might have caught us, and so now it's on the right now, the way they talk about it is open because they got angry with Obama, and then when Trump came out, he basically said, "Let the hate out." You know what I'm saying? It's okay, talk about it. You should be able to talk about it. Just like there's nothing wrong with hating people. There's nothing wrong with being racist. There's nothing bad about it. You have a right to feel it the way that you have, that you do, and you should be able to say it, you know, whenever you feel like saying it. And so these people say it more, but in this, you could just see the description, and it was so disheartening because she was not being described as a teenage girl. Like, she wasn't being described as a person. Like, she was being looked at equivalent to, you know, to some of the most heinous people. And nobody seemed to it was more like, yeah, she deserved to die. Yeah,
that's exactly what it looked
like. You know, and that disturbed me.
That's what they did a long time ago with that movie, Birth of a Nation. They gave a depiction of what we're supposed to be, who we are, what we are like. And this is what, and I'm gonna be honest with you, it still happens today. And what's crazy about it is, just like you said, Martin Luther King had to deal with it when he came up north, but we deal with it now because we still, even the typical person, you walk down the street and you see somebody in a hoodie, you start being like, what's this dude about to be up to? What is this dude on? What is this person on? Even with blacks encountering blacks, you know, the typical black, like I know how me and you are, we'll walk down the street and be like, what's up, man? Or whatever the case may be. But the typical person sees somebody in a hoodie or see somebody, whatever, they see the typical black person and they start getting nervous or get scared. So that's exactly how they go look at us. So, and I think that's one of the things that that movie a while ago, back in the day, before they even had, like 1915, before they even had words in the movies, that's what they did with Birth of a Nation. They villainized who we are, made us seem like we the animals, made us seem like we were less of a person. And so when they had crimes, that's what justified throwing us in jail faster. Just like, I don't know if you heard about it, but the guy who, now I'm not justifying him doing this, but the guy who went to go stalk the Kardashians, he stalked one of the sisters, showed up at her house, went in her pools, got naked and jumped in her pool. He got arrested for that. 6 hours later, they arrested him again because he was stalking the other sister. And by the time that her lawyer was so cold at what he did, by the time he got out of jail that second time, they already built a case based off of his past and everything so that they can arrest him and just throw him in jail and keep him in jail and not release him. Now, I know that that's a whole separate situation, but I'm saying that to say, this is what they do. They build a case against us before we even have a chance. It's already established for us that we ain't worth nothing but entertaining, singing and dancing, or being a thug. That's the only thing they know us for. So yes, when we was at war, it was cool for us to be on their team when they needed us to fight with them. But when it came back to being home, oh no, we can go back on in chains. That's how they looked at it.
Right. And, you know, it made me think, and like when you said about how they describe us and demonize us. And this is something that I was talking about recently, too, because, you know, because I was listening. I don't know what song I listened to, but I listened to music. You know, I was part of first generation to get rap music. Like, we're part of the first rap music generation. Like, when I say rap music, I mean gangster rap. Mm-hmm. Like stuff that's about killing and shooting and calling women that, like, we're part of that. Like that was our experience when we were young. I remember when I was young, rap was really, really clean initially. And then once I got to be a teenager, it started to change a little bit. By the time I was like 18, 19, rap was all, if you weren't talking about negativity, mm-hmm. you weren't selling.
When nobody
when you said things about demonizing and villainizing and things that they do on their side to make sure that they talk about us as individual people, I was talking to Camille and I was thinking about the drug game. And the drug game is something that is on a street level is very understood. It's not something I necessarily need to explain. But what I realize is in that it is a real thing, but on the music side, has jumped into promote it. Mm-hmm. So hip hop music and rap music promotes it, mm-hmm. even though it's a real thing, it doesn't need promotion, but the music industry has latched on to the ability to promote it. Mm-hmm. So it promotes it. So when we think about those type of things where you say where people demonize us or whatever, but we ourselves, we will demonize ourselves.
We do.
And so we are complicit in the descriptions. And the reason I say that is because real time, we know people who are on drugs. Mm-hmm. We know people who are addicts, who have real problems. Mm-hmm. And where I can brag about how successful I am as a businessman, making sure that I keep drugs on the street. When I sit back, like when we talk about crack or we talk about cocaine, we talk about, you know, people talk about Snowfall, and they watch the Snowfall and they'll watch that and see that where there's somebody making money or there's somebody that's living good, there's somebody living nice, there are so many people whose lives are destroyed. And I remember when I was younger, I remember that a person that was on crack, a crackhead, when I was younger, was just a person who basically stole. They didn't necessarily look like anything. You just couldn't trust that they would steal. Like it was like a drug that made you want to steal things from other people, because that's what it was. Like, oh, he's a crackhead. Crackhead, take this. Crackhead, take that. Shoplift, blah, 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 blah. But it has grown into something that is an epidemic. And we use the media and popular culture to promote it on top of that. And we're the only ones that's getting destroyed by it, but it's a cycle we can't get out of.
But, and I think that's part of the, and that's why I think you're absolutely right when it comes to it being a systematic thing. Because I don't know if you, well, I'm pretty sure we, just like you said, we noticed that the most popular music, of course, everybody wanted to be a rapper at the time because rappers is what make money. And this was the thing, this is what was hit. But the most popular talked about, even now, glorifying drugs. And they even, the songs is just saying it straight out, Percocet, Molly Perkins, and all this other stuff. And they're talking about selling drugs and the glorification and justification. So while we trying to raise our kids, trying to get them focused on trying to be better and trying to do this or trying to go to school or trying to get an education or building a business, what's showing that, what you don't ever hear the songs talk about, basically I bust my butt to make sure I'm taking care of my family, I'm being a good dad or nothing like that, because that's not what's glorified. If somebody come out with a song like that, it ain't gonna be popular, it's not gonna sell, because that's not what they pushing. And that's why I think that crib to prison pipeline is real, because when you look at it, you grew up in East Cleveland, I grew up on Huff. Our schools, like, we didn't even have books. But I look at it 10 years ago when I was staying with my I was staying in Cleveland Heights, they was giving kids laptops to take home. Like, even now my kids don't have full books in Cleveland public school. Well, my kids didn't have full books, so they were sharing laptops or had to keep laptops at home. But the way that they distribute the education amongst each other, the way that they gave out things among the different neighborhoods, that's systemic right there. That's systematic racism, because you're doing it, you're putting people in certain categories that live in certain neighborhoods or that look a certain type of way. And you in the neighborhoods that you like, or that you look, that people that look like you live in, y'all good. Y'all taking care of them. Y'all giving them the best technology. I watched my daughter, and she was she goes to an engineering school, and I watched her in her ninth grade year. They had this program, they had this project that they was doing downtown. And when she went to the school to do her project, I'm looking at her, and it's her and her group of kids, and it's, I mean, her and her team, and it's another team from her school, and then it's this other team from a whole different city, a white neighborhood, a real white neighborhood, where they came and they had they stuff so elaborate and so immaculate. And I'm, me and her sitting back and looking, and that's why, you know, just like you posted about conversations that you got to have with your kids, me and her had to sit in the back, and we had a conversation about, do you see the opportunity that they're giving them? If you want a chance, not only are you a female, but you're African American. So you really got to do what you got to go to a whole different level to try to take your chance, because ain't nobody giving you nothing out here. As a matter of fact, they're going to make it so much more easier for you to fail, and waiting for you to get pregnant, waiting for you to become a statistic, waiting for you to, hell, get shot by another police officer. They're waiting for you to become one of these people. So you got to do your best to avoid it all at whatever means you possibly can to be successful. Because they,
yeah, I mean, these are, and that's why I said that, you know, because I literally before I wrote that post, I literally sat Keith down. I had to talk to him. I had to say, Keith, if you're approached by a police officer, say this, do this. Like he looking at me like, what? I'm like, trust me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. If they think that they caught you in a situation, don't run. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, don't take off and run, even if everybody else is running. Like these are things, even if you didn't do nothing, don't say anything other than yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. And don't, you know, like you have to be a certain way, because only thing that has changed out here is videos, mm-hmm. and videotaping. But again, these, like you said, there is so much from the education side. Like they did, like we did, I watched the show, I forgot what it was called, but the guy came to Cleveland and he did a documentary on East Cleveland City Schools. He has a national show and Shaker. He compared Shaker schools and East Cleveland. And he was saying that he was looking at what Shaker had, mm-hmm. compared to what East Cleveland had, mm-hmm. you know, as far as school. And they literally had like a club. There was a club at Shaker where it was about mm-hmm. video games. Like they had a video game team and mm-hmm. club where the kids was going after school and they could play video games as an after school hobby, where they would compete in tournaments like with 2K and all this type of stuff. That was a real club. Like that was a real, they said the club, they said that the school had hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of things to do. Mm-hmm. And the college, the prep classes, and they literally had an equal opportunity group in the school that was made up of different ethnic groups of kids that would make sure to answer any complaints, or if kids thought they was being mistreated or treated unfairly in school, that the students would address it. And this is a place where they could come and try to figure out how to make the school work and be in more harmony together racially. Like the level of the teaching and the technology. And they was talking about the stuff that go into East Cleveland, how they are supposedly getting the same amount of money per student. You know what I'm saying? But they don't even have anywhere close to the same resources. Mm. And it's like, you know, what happens in this, and there's no open enrollment, but it just, because we know that in order for you to be great, Lamar, you have to be 5 to 10 times better.
Yeah, you gotta
than
be.
Your white counterpart, period. And you cannot have any, you can't have the flaws. Like you have to be better and you can't have the flaws, because a person can have all the flaws in the world, yep. and they'll make concessions, but mm-hmm. you are not allowed to have that same type of flaw, and or your career will be over.
And we've seen that just between the last two presidents. The right. difference in the last two presidents, there's yeah. no way Barack Obama would have been able to last as long as he did, doing half the stuff that
they would impeach him.
They would have impeached him fat.
They would have impeached him within the first 2 years. Mm-hmm. And when I say impeach, they would have impeached him and to putting him out. Not impeached him like Donald Trump was. Like, you got impeached and still stayed in office.
Would have voted him out. They would have voted him out.
No matter. Put him out. And he might have went to jail.
Yeah, he definitely would have went to jail afterwards. And that's what's so crazy about it. That's the truth. And that's the type of society. So I can understand that. And that's what I was talking about. So I think we kind of covered a couple of different things in this. As we talked about the dream, and I believe that we do got to have a dream. We still got to, and I think that's between Martin and Obama and everything and anybody in between of the conversation that we've been talking about. Martin talked about the dream and Obama talked about how he inspired. And last week, I kind of touched on how Obama, how what we was going through in 2008. I won't even say eight, I'll say what we was going through in 2007 and 2006. And how in a place that we was in. And we remember, because I was in a war based off of the previous President Bush. And I remember, I don't know how many people remember, but before Trump, Bush was the worst president most of us have ever seen. I think Trump made Bush look like an amazing guy. He really did. He made Bush look like, and I remember, like, Bush, there was no legit reason. I remember reading a history book when I was in school, and it talked about us not having a reason for being at the war. You know, he said it was weapons of mass destruction, but there wasn't but it wasn't justified. It was never found. All types of stuff, and the way, the amount of money, and the then it came out talking about all the different companies that Cheney owned and all this other stuff. That's the reason that. So, in saying that, the economic situation of 2007, 2006, 2006, 7, and 8, that's what made Barack Obama such an experience, because the housing market, you remember what gas was at? Gas was at $5.
Yeah.
The housing market, I remember when we first bought our house, it was $100,000. And then in 6 months, it was worth $30,000.
Well, you know, but history taught us about Bush. When Bush fell out of office, he wasn't considered the worst president of all time, because not yet. He just did a bad job. It just seemed like he had made some mistakes. But history told us that President Bush was way worse than we really initially thought, because it took a couple of years afterwards, because it wasn't until it was all like it was over, like within the last 3 months of his presidency, everybody was just like, holy crap, like, because you kind of sat back and was just like,
this is terrible.
Because I tell you, I voted for Bush too. I voted for Bush for the second term.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I voted for Bush for a second term because we had just started everything. And I was thinking, like, okay, well, Bush gonna have to be the one to handle this, because, you know, we dropping bombs, we got troops, like, he gotta be the one responsible. Yeah.
Kerry couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
He couldn't handle it.
But by the time his Latinx 4 years was up, the United States had went over a cliff, completely over a cliff.
Joke.
So you would hear like Trump supporters, and Trump would say, man, when I heard the United States, Barack Obama had destroyed everything, he had did this, he had made all these contracts and all this stuff was wrong, and he sold everybody out, blah, blah, blah. Bruh, when Obama got the United States from Bush,
mm-hmm.
It was, listen, the United States was in foreclosure, bro.
It was in foreclosure. So much debt, it was ridiculous.
Like, we was bad, because, I mean, literally the predatory lending market mm-hmm. had ate up so many houses. It was so many houses on the market from people losing their homes because they were getting mortgages they couldn't afford.
Yep.
That the banks were owning, ended up owning all of this property. The banks had all these homes because people was just getting the houses foreclosed, and the bank owned all these homes. Mm-hmm. Like the banks couldn't even take them all. It was just too much property. And so the bank system crumbled, Wall Street crumbled. They bottomed out. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talking about the gas prices. I was working at AT&T. I just drive out to Painesville every day. And I remember filling up my F-150 from AT&T. I was putting $80 to $100 in there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like, to fill it up.
Shoot, I remember I was filling up my, our, what was that? I filled up my PT Cruiser, and we was putting in $50, $60.
Yeah.
Like, real easy. Real easy.
And they said it was messed up when Trump got a hold of the country.
No. But see, once again, that goes to the systematic racism. Like, you go realize, okay, you go be able to tell a story based off of your perspective. You know, and that's what it is. You know, so it's the hate is so thick for anybody. Like, I'm telling you, where I work at, and people hate to see me. I have a couple employees who hate the fact that I'm a supervisor, that I'm a manager. They hate that I'm their manager, and they hate that I'm their manager, and they hate the fact that the person that's over me is black. They hate that. I mean, they just despise it because they feel like I'm beneath them. Like, I've seen messages and I heard stuff. I've caught them talking to the point where, just like you said, I have to bring a whole different level of what I do, just so I can be successful, just so I can hold my ground, so I can do what I got to do. There's so many people, like I said, it's the hate is ridiculous. And then you do have the black on black hate as well, when we hating against each other. It's ridiculous. I think that's why Obama had to come the way he did. And I think that's why when I talked about Inspire Like Obama last week, it was such a significance, because I don't think people understand how important and how valuable it is to lift up each other. That's one thing that I can always say. That's why I have no hesitation. One of the reasons why I have no hesitation to call you my best friend, simply because you don't hate. You know, we go blow up together. You know, if it's any way that I got your back, if you need me, I got your back. If I need you, you got my back. We don't, if whatever's going on, we happy for each other. When I bought my house, you was happy for me. When you bought your house, you was happy for me. When we get married, we happy for each other. When we had children, we happy for each other. When we go through mess, we got each other back. But we able to have that bond without being jealous of each other.
And a lot of people don't feel like that.
It don't, but it's crazy because we do got that. Like, we got that bad. Not only do we have to deal with the racism from the other side, but we got to deal with the racism from the inside too.
Yeah, that, and you know, and that's even more disappointing, because you know, I have a lot of people, and they say it to me all the time, and they say, Keith, you need to go ahead and open up your restaurant. Keith, you need to go ahead and sell food. I have people in my inbox saying, if you sell a dinner, if you sell food, I'll buy it, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But you know, in the back of my mind, you know what I'm saying? Bruh, the minute I step out there, people gonna say, I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not buying that. Now the quality ain't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll want to watch me get out there to see what happened,
mm-hmm.
to see me fall off, but not necessarily want to see me to succeed. And that's how I truly feel, because when I was out here doing a business for myself, when I was out here doing this stuff, I had to pick up little side jobs and little jobs here and there, mm-hmm. to compensate, because I would go to jobs and people wouldn't even want to, they don't want to pay. Like, they don't want to pay, they don't want to, they want a discount, they want this, this, and that, because they don't want ultimately to see you excel past where you're at or past where they're at. Like, that something about that bothers people, to mm-hmm. see somebody flying. Like if you roll up and you got a nice new truck or something like that, and he was like, L riding hard all of a sudden, you know, he got this new truck, he think he better than somebody, blah, 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 blah. instead of saying, yeah, L doing it. You know what I'm saying? Remember like that commercial when we was younger for McDonald's when Calvin got the job at McDonald's?
Calvin. That's Calvin. McDonald's.
Yeah, but you know how everybody, he walked down the street and everybody was happy that he had a job. Like, look at Calvin. Calvin got a job. And I mean, it was McDonald's, and that's how the commercial was. It's trying to promote you working for McDonald's. But the thing is, we don't have that. We don't have that. You know what I'm saying? Like, every time you get a promotion, every time you move up, I'll be telling you, like, man, this is what I'm talking about, L, because I know what you came from. I know where you know what I'm saying? I can see the whole journey of it. You know what I'm saying? And so when I see you moving up to these ladders, you the same young man that was working for part-time and volunteering and, you know what I'm saying, carrying a big folder of CDs, you know what I'm saying? Carrying a big folder of CDs, you know, because that was your thing. You was keeping all this music with you. And so now you talking about managing people and gotten to let people go and all this type of stuff. That's a big transition. You know what I'm saying? So I mean, if we can all see each other like that, we'd be a better as a people, because we want to see each other do good. Like it's messed up. It is.
And then, so yeah, and then that, I agree with you. Like it is messed up, and that's why I wanted to talk about inspiring last week. That's why that was a huge thing to tap on. We went through a lot of different personal characteristics. We talked about how Harriet Tubman led, and it was eye opening to me, especially because your mom always taught us leadership. And she really emphasized the importance and the value behind leadership. And so when I started looking at Harriet and her leadership qualities, like, she wasn't no joke. She ain't let people tell them no. She didn't take the, one thing I did that stuck out with all of these people was most of these people had to change their name for some reason or another. And that always, whenever I hear about a name change, it takes me back to biblically how who was it that wrestled with that had to change?
That guy was Jacob.
Jacob had to have his name changed. And the reason why is because he was initially named Deceiver. But God had to change his name because he changed his personality, he changed his character, but he changed his destiny, he changed his job. And I think that was a real important thing with most of these people, is when God shifted them, even Malcolm, from Malcolm Little to Malcolm X, when God shifted him, he took him out of the mentality that he was previously doing. And it's so crazy, because my whole thing through this whole series was, all things work together through the good of those who love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. And it talked about how even when he transitioned people into something that they may not think was God, he used all of those situations to bring him glory. Like after Malcolm X, went out of the country and experienced that the Nation of Islam was selling a different story than what true Muslims really function, how they really function. It ain't about color, like he thought, like they made it out to be here. And he tried to shift the narrative here, which is part of the reason why they said he got assassinated. I just think all of the ways that these people have changed their name and transitioned their name, I think it was very significant. And just the people, I think that really stood out. That's one of the things for me that stood out in this series, was how many people had to change their name, and through changing their name, it changed who they did with what they did and how they functioned. But like I said, it was, I don't know if anybody else, and I said this every single week, every time that I went to talk about one of these people, it gave me so much within myself, and it gave me the different value of who I am and these characteristics and what they brought to me, and how if I want to be, I got to change my way of thinking, because Marcus Garvey, he was another one. Like, he, his way of thinking was so radical, he told people straight up, he said, you know what? He went to the KKK and said, you know what? Y'all don't want us here. We don't want to be here. Why don't we both work together and for the good of the goal? And let's just all get us out to out of America. Like, and that he inspired people like Martin Luther King. He inspired people like Malcolm X. He inspired people like Gandhi, you know, like, what's the president of Africa? First black president of Africa.
You talking about Mandela?
Yeah, he inspired Mandela. Like, he, Marcus Garvey inspired so many people. And that's what I was, I'm just excited about knowing this thing. And it motivates me and pushing on what I need to push on to.
But, you know, also it's important to note that, I'm going to say this so you can close out, but it's also important to know that these people, like the ones that are on your shirt, they're trailblazers. They open things up, but they didn't finish the story. Because their overall, what they did, it meant something. But there was something missing, because there was a knowledge that was missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like what you said, what I told you about Martin Luther King, what he found out when he went to the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Harriet Tubman realized that, you know, once you took people out of slavery, or you moved into the North, but a lot of people wanted to stay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you talk about Malcolm X, you know, he was preaching about a Nation of Islam, but he still didn't realize that they had Americanized and turned into something that was similar to the Christian church, that was that became about money, that became about popularity, and there was human overtones in it that steered in another direction. You know, Marcus Garvey moving to Africa, take the black people moving to Africa without realizing that a lot of black people in America was from here. Mm-hmm. They weren't from Africa, that this was their country, and there was no reason for them to leave. I mean, Maya Angelou with her poetry or whatever, she realized, you know, she didn't get a chance to see how expansive her words could be, and how her writing, or she would tell her stories. But, you know, all of these people, like Madam C.J. Walker, the first female black millionaire, she ran for office, but most of all, she was just the first of many, because it took another 67 years before, you know, millionaires could be realized, and now there are more. Mm-hmm. So now that we have an expansive view of what's going on, and the knowledge about what's going on, they just took the first step for us. We have to be the generation of people to take it to the next step. We have to expound ourselves and expand ourselves, and not allow ourselves to be to think that, like, in other words, I'm gonna say this. I don't want to talk too long, but I'm gonna say this. It's good that we talk about the people that are on your shirt when it comes to Black history.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to realize that from their time to today, your shirt should have names on the sleeves, on the back, everywhere, because we should be creating this, and that our kids can learn about the Black history of Martin Luther King and Harriet Tubman, but they should also learn about many other Black leaders that came mm-hmm. after them, and the people who are doing things today.
That's so true.
Because mm-hmm. there's more that has happened since then, and there's still more to come.
The local, and that's so true. The local leadership, like the one cat that's around here doing things. He took over my old neighborhood. Steer Jones. Bashir Jones.
Bashir.
Okay. Yeah. So, like, it's so many people who are going around here, is still doing some stuff, and that you're absolutely right. And that's the same thing with us. You know, one thing I always think about is how, when we, no matter where we going, what we doing, All the kids always be like, hey, Mr. L, hey, Mr. K, you know, we can get, it's not that we are celebrities, but we have made an impact, and that's what we need to just continue to do. You know, the title of this episode, part 12 right here, We Be Like, is They Were Like. So now, because of what they were like, it inspired us so we can be like, exactly, we can be an inspiration. We can be, we can have the dreams. We can be the leaders. We can be the fighters. We can be the thinkers, writers, builders, speakers, educators, believers, challengers, and an inspiration.
Yeah.
But because it's going to continue, just like you said, the story ain't over. I really appreciate it, Fagan. Like I said, next week we got some stuff going on. We got next week. I mean, we're not gonna be live for the next 2 weeks, but I got starting a new episode. It's gonna be called Bridge the Gap. And the first part of that series, I'm gonna start this new series called Bridge the Gap. The first part of the series is Generational Gap. So it'll be me, and I'd have two other people from different generations, and we just go throw some stuff out there and see what it's go. How they feel about it. First, like I said, it's just Bridge the Gap. And then we go be talking about, I want to bridge the gap when it comes to males and females. So I'm going to have a couple on my live. I'm looking for a police officer. I'm looking for somebody who can talk to me from a white perspective, but just so we can bridge the gap on racial things. We're really trying to do this so it can be for real. So we can have some real life conversations. So we can definitely make some impact. Once again, thank you, Fagan. I really appreciate everything you do. Go ahead.
No, I'm listening.
I really appreciate everything you do. And if we catch you, you'll see it next week. Like I said, next week, we will start with a new series called Bridge the Gap. This is your man, L. Wonder. Go ahead. This
is Keeping the Streets.
And we out.
We out.